were there in October, what we saw were children sleeping and begging on the streets, piles of rubble on what were once magnificent boulevards. I mean, it was still a sight to behold, to witness what a great country in terms of its physical attributes, its architecture, and its other manifestations of what was once a very wealthy country, to see it torn asunder under the guise of bringing democracy to Iraq. We learned very quickly that there was no democracy in Iraq because the Coalition Provisional Authority was utilizing a decree that was passed by Saddam Hussein's regime in 1987 that prohibited the organizing of laborers and having a collective bargaining agreement for public sector workers. Now, as you all know, Iraq was once a socialist country. Oil industry, longshore workers, rail workers, all the major sectors are publicly owned. Saddam determined that these public sector workers would be described as civil servants. Now, what is particularly menacing about this notion of what the occupation authority is doing is that they are preventing public sector workers from organizing, and this, in fact, is making it easier for privatization to occur in that country. This isn't just about controlling the oil. This is about reorganizing an economy in the Middle East, creating what could best be described as a maquiladora of the Middle East, where once women were some of the most highly trained and educated in the Arab world, despite the treachery and terrible deeds of Saddam Hussein. All of that is now forgotten. People are worse off now than they were, and the world knows it. But when we went there in October, it was a shock when we came back and told people what we learned. We learned that with the fall of the regime came I guess what could best be described as a depression of their economy. The dinar is the equivalent of the Iraqi dollar. 2,000 dinars for one American dollar. The cost of food, shelter, clothing, all skyrocketed. We talked to workers who told us that during the Saddam Hussein regime, that they had profit sharing, housing allowance, food allowance, and in some instances, these bonuses exceeded their salary. They said all of that had halted since the occupation authority had taken power. We talked to trade unionists who told us that they had demonstrated in front of Jerry Bremer's headquarters. He's now living in one of Saddam Hussein's palaces, where they had organized a union of the unemployed, where it is now illegal to have any kind of mass demonstration in Iraq. That's from the decree of Paul Bremer. What we need to be very clear of is this. The Iraqi people, the trade unionists that we spoke to, made it very clear that they were very glad to see Saddam Hussein's regime fall, but that they wanted the Americans out. They wanted to be able to solve their own problems. They also made it very clear that they were in no way connected with the resistance. They said that the fall of Saddam Hussein created political space for them to function. What a lot of people don't know is that unions in Iraq go back to the days of English colonialism, where in fact some of the earliest workers to be organized were in the oil sector and longshore workers. And during that time, they were forced to go underground. They were not able to function on the top of the ground until there was a revolution that took place in 1958 that brought to power Karim Qasim. And from 1958 to 1963, Iraq made some of its greatest achievements with regards to its industrial development of infrastructure. That's when the Port of Umm Qasr was built. In 1963, a CIA-inspired plot brought in the assassination of Karim Qasim and the establishment of the Ba'ath Party. And I guess many of you are very much aware of the fact that just a few days ago it was announced that the United States had made a deal with some generals of the Ba'ath Party to lead the military effort in Fallujah. Is there something wrong with that picture? Using laws of Saddam Hussein to prevent workers from organizing, and now using generals of Saddam Hussein to do their dirty work. No weapons of mass destruction. No democracy for Iraqi workers. And one of the things that really got to me is when we had an opportunity to talk to Iraqi women workers at the General Leather Factory, who told us how they had been working in this factory for more than 10 years and how their wages were the same as they were during the Saddam Hussein regime, $120 per month, no overtime pay. How extended family members now found themselves unemployed and how they were attempting to care for those extended family members. We talked to workers at a vegetable oil plant who told us and showed us how they were cannibalizing parts of the machines, taking parts from this machine to work in this machine, and that the reason why they could not get parts for the factory is because there was the use of polyvinyl chloride in the manufacturing of plastic bottles that the special weapons inspectors had determined to be a possible site of creating chemical weapons. And as such, they weren't able to buy the much-needed material to keep the factories going. Some of us have forgotten about the nearly 13 years of sanctions against Iraq, where their children were dying by the thousands, crippling the people and an economy. And what is most outstanding in my mind is that when we were there, David Bacon and I saw little evidence at all of any kind of reconstruction efforts. We didn't see any cranes. I did happen to see a Kellogg Brown and Root hard hat when I visited one of the refineries. They apparently have been doing work to rehabilitate some of the pipelines there. But I was very inspired by what I saw of the Iraqi people. They were very friendly. They were very open, especially of people that were subjected to the kind of repression where they could not trust their neighbors. They were very, very open with us. I have brought along with me tonight a videotape to show, but unfortunately we won't be able to show it, and perhaps I'll be able to come back and show it at another time. In the face of overwhelming odds, people are organizing. One of the things that they told us is that we need resources. We need computers. We need telephones. So the U.S. Labor Against the War has started an international solidarity fund so that we could make available to those workers what they need. We were planning on being in Iraq today. There was going to be another delegation going. But we were told by Occupation Watch that it was just too dangerous to go right now. We were disappointed, but we most definitely understood the crisis. Things are getting worse by the day. What can be done? What should be done? Well, the ILWU Local 10 is calling for a million worker march on Washington on October 16th, right before the election. The purpose is to put forth a labor agenda. When you listen to the comments being made and the criticism being leveled at Mr. Bush from Senator Kerry, he's criticizing Bush from the right, saying that he's not managing the war in Iraq correctly, that there should be more troops. So for those that are saying in the labor movement in America that anybody but Bush, are they saying that we need to have Bush light? We need to make Senator Kerry understand what it is that the American working man wants and woman, what the working class needs. We want what they're trying to take away from you, national health care. Yes, we want national health care. Yes, and you want to fight to keep it, because as the sister said earlier, you have the fight for freedom is never over, and freedom is not free. It costs. There has never been a more concentrated attack upon working people ever before in our history. We're living in a time when world leaders openly talk about assassinating and actually committing assassinations. We're talking about corporate greed run amok, where corporations are making record revenue and then turning around and telling workers that they have to take a cut. Unabashed greed. I'm so happy to be with you today, to have been a part of this May Day, because it's given me a whole lot of hope and a whole lot of energy. And I'm going to go back and tell people what I witnessed today and what's going on. The struggle that is going on in Iraq, I remind workers all the time, I said, you know, what they're doing in Iraq is a dry run of what they'd like to do at home. All public sector workers don't have a right to organize a union, make us public servants, tell us that it is an impediment for unions to exist because they are not compatible with defending national security. That's what Mr. Bush is saying. When he established the Homeland Security Department, he said that those Homeland Security people who worked there could not belong to a union. He threatened to take over the longshore docks, saying that it would have been a violation of national security for us to have exercised our right to a strike. That the movement of cargo for the war on terrorism and linking economic interests with democracy, very, very dangerous tone. And we need to understand that. And we need to organize and we need to fight back. In conclusion, I would just like to say this. Don't be dismayed and don't be pessimistic. I believe that we're facing a period right now where we don't have any choice but to fight back. Because if we don't, we could very well end up just like the Iraqi workers are right now, without the right to organize, without the right to have collective bargaining. Where I come from, the bedrock of democracy is the ability of workers to freely assemble, to choose people and organizations to represent them. That is what democracy is all about. Thank you very much for listening to me tonight, and welcome you to your province. An injury to one is an injury to all. Join me. An injury to one is an injury to all. An injury to one.